Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Yo, what up? Taking a tyranny, ready to roll on this Tuesday. Hope everybody's doing great. It's the Taking a Tyranny Show. And we're coming to you from our studios here, the Rocket Mortgage Studio. When you need certainty in the home buying process with a loan that fits your life, Rocket can. Big day, a lot of good stories, back together. Teak, what's up, buddy? How are you today?
All is good, brother. Happy belated, even though I told you this already, Father's Day. I know you had a good one, just like I had a good one as well. And it was a good weekend, man. And
it was.
Graduation for AJ yesterday.
I saw.
Which is crazy. I'm getting old, man. Got a 19, soon to be 19-year-old.
Yeah.
So it was a good weekend. It was a fun weekend. I hadn't seen all my kids, BT, together in probably 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
Been a long, long time. So it was great.
Yeah, you got to go wide lens on that. I saw the great picture on Instagram. But all the cuties, the girls, and the boys are getting big. Chasen is a beast.
He's enormous.
You're right. He is
enormous.
Big
now,
boy.
Now you see it relative to me, how much taller he is than me.
Did you give AJ the keys to the car? Did you get him a car?
No, I did not. Not yet. Not yet.
I hear you.
He keeps asking for the old Maserati, which, by the way, I told you this, BT. We bought it when he was born.
Yep.
So he claims it. And I don't drive it anymore. Mm-hmm. It's been sitting there for, I don't know, at least 5 years without being moved. It's 19 years old because I bought it when he was born. And he wants it. So one of these days, he's got to prove himself worthy, and I'll hand it over.
Mm-hmm. Has he put some labor into it?
Has he lifted up the hood?
And
that's the thing. That's exactly what I told him, BT. I was like, this car needs new tires because they're both, all four of them are rotted.
Yep.
Right? It needs a little bit of body work. You got to probably replace the battery. You got to change some things and things of that nature. It's like, we could send it to somebody, but it will mean a lot more if you do it yourself.
Yeah. I'm sure it needs a new system, too.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
The radio's got to be a bit.
It was from 2002, man.
A bit antiquated, right? Well, listen, I saw that, and time is flying for sure. Probably not flying for Ben Simmons, though. It probably was going as slow as it could possibly go throughout this series against the Hawks. Obviously, this is what we talked about yesterday. But I want to play something here because Doc Rivers spoke again. All right. So he initially spoke about Ben Simmons. And I want to compare and contrast this and then want to get into what Doc Rivers is in all probability alluding to. But first, and to me, this was very revealing. Usually first impressions, first reactions, you know, there's usually some truth in there. Here's Doc after the ouster in Game 7 about Ben Simmons as his point guard, as a championship point guard. Here he is.
Yeah, I don't know. Obviously, he struggled from the free throw line, and that became a factor in the series. There's no doubt about that. I still believe in him, but we have work to do. You know, we're going to have to get in the gym, put a lot of work in, and go forward.
Doc, do you think Ben Simmons can still be a point guard for a championship team like the one you guys want to become?
Yeah, David, I don't know that question or the answer to that right now. You know, so I don't know the answer to that.
Oof. Now, first of all, before we get to today, and I'm quite sure that Doc was like, probably better build back his trade value up and maybe take a little bit of a different turn here. But as the coach says that, he's only 24, so I don't know that it's entirely disrespectful, but in 2021, probably a little more open than most coaches are, you know, as transparent, as forthright as you get these days. Do you have an issue with what Doc just said?
Oh, yeah, man. That is fully, like, shade. He's been your point guard for the last 2 years, and all of a sudden you're like, him and Holland, maybe, I don't know the answer to that.
Yep.
I mean, what the hell are you talking about, Doc? He's your point guard. And if you don't think he can play point guard, maybe that means it's foreshadowing, pushing him back down into the post in some capacity, but he doesn't have any skills down there, right? He's better of a point guard and as a great defender, as we talked about all year long, and you said he should have won the Defensive Player of the Year, and you probably could have given his versatility, but Rudy Gobert, you know, he's tipped the cap to him. That dude's great defensively, but you know what I mean. He's a great defender.
There.
He's been really good as a point guard, so if he's not your point guard, what's he doing? Because he's not going in the post and learning all these moves that a lot of people think he should revert back to because of what he played at LSU, which was basically a point, maybe slash point forward. But, I mean, yeah, this is full shade by Doc Rivers because what else is he going to do for you?
See, to me, this wouldn't be a shift in position. This would be a change in address. That's the only option for me. Like,
yeah,
this
I heard,
is not
I heard
about
you saying that yesterday. You're right.
For sure. This is not about trying to reinvent his game and have him come back and play, you know, where he's your small big, your small five, or try to, I don't know what you try to do with him. I know we saw it briefly, you know, with decent results when Embiid was banged up, but that's not the direction that I would go. I think it's more about, you know, fundamentally, do they believe enough in his wiring to invest all the time it's going to take to overhaul the mechanics of his shooting motion. And I find it interesting. Stephen A. Smith said today, I wrote it down, he said that Stephen got a text on the air. They were talking about this. And he read the text, and it was something along the lines of, doesn't like to work, as I paraphrase, doesn't like to work. He's used to being coddled, and he doesn't like to be challenged.
Wow.
So if somebody, and that was somebody within the organization, I know that he certainly said that, prefaced that.
It would to be.
Well, yeah, for sure. Could it be a trainer? I guess it technically could be somebody else, but Stephen A. did say that it was somebody within the organization. If somebody felt emboldened to send that text to Stephen mid-conversation, that can't be one rogue thought. That's got to be the general consensus within the walls of the Sixers organization. And if that's the case, do you risk investing everything in him, having it not work, and instead of getting 80 cents on the dollar this offseason, having it drop to maybe below 60% if it goes really sideways?
Yeah, that,
that's the dilemma.
I agree, BT. That's the challenge. And you know, the problem that I'm starting to see is that it's the 76ers or people around or commenting on the 76ers. They want to salvage this, right? They want to figure out a way to help Ben Simmons become a better whatever, scorer, shooter, etc. And we heard this today, and first thing I said as wrote in our Slack channel was, are you blanking kidding me? Like, seriously? They want him to switch and shoot right-handed.
Yeah.
Because he's left-handed, and he primarily does everything left-handed, not necessarily well. We've seen him try to do some things right-handed. He doesn't really do that well either. But now they want him to fully switch to being a righty, and that's going to somehow reinvigorate his confidence and his ability to score and be not a shooter, because he's never going to be a shooter, but just someone who's consistent with what he's trying to do, even in the paint, right? That makes no sense to me. So that screams of desperation, right? We've had this kid.
You should be desperate when you go 37%, which, by the way, is the worst percentage ever in the history of the NBA with at least 73 throw attempts, and that includes Wilt and Shaq and some other renowned bricklayers. I think it's absolutely time to be desperate.
Yeah,
if you're not desperate now, what are you waiting for?
Do you think it? I mean, how does that even work? Right? What's he going to do? He's going to spend the next 4 months shooting right-handed, and then all of a sudden he's going to feel like he's a right-handed shooter?
Yes.
You are actually more qualified on this than I am, because for those who don't know, BT jacked up his back. BT's a lefty. Jacked up his back. Literally couldn't swing left-handed.
Nope. Had surgery.
Started playing golf right-handed.
Yes.
And actually got pretty decent at it.
Relatively speaking, I guess.
My point is, if you asked me to take left-handed clubs and try to hit, it would never get off the ground. Uh-huh. I would never make any kind of contact.
I got you.
Making contact, right?
Yeah.
So switching sounds easy, and I know he's ambidextrous and can use both hands.
Which I'm not, by the way. Not officially, no. So,
but, I mean, is that even plausible?
Yes.
That this could work?
It's
how?
The only route to me. Think about this. Now, I first of all, you know, the guy, and maybe it's the baseball background, because the golf swing really at the end of the day is just throwing a ball.
Mm-hmm.
And as a righty thrower, I, you know, you throw more, which the replication is more of a righty golf swing than a lefty, which is odd. So really, I'm kind of, I guess, in a way, without even knowing it, I'm used to getting my body in that direction, throwing the ball, you know, from here to there and having your body turn. But there's so many more parts of the body that are moving. To me, first of all, I think there's been a glimpse in practice where he's messed around with the right hand and they've seen something that is somewhat functional. I really studied his free throw conundrum this morning, right? And I just found layers of old YouTube film, right? Some of it very recent, some of it going back to his first year. And to me, the biggest issue is that his hand's going sideways. It's going sideways. So he doesn't have the proper spin. He doesn't have the proper arc, number one. So I think, you know, unlike the golf swing where there's so many different checkpoints, take it back, knee, rotate, come through, boom, boom, leg, etc., follow through, belt to the target, this is a more simple adjustment where there's, first of all, the range in which you are changing and moving is almost inches.
Yeah.
It is inches. And it's not an explosive motion. And explosive motions generally, and elongated explosive motions are generally where the fundamental breakdowns occur. To me, to go from this hand to that hand is not a big ask. And quite frankly, I think you can't be worse than 37%.
Yeah. Good point.
So it's worth throwing a dart at the board. To me, I think it's going to work if he puts in the time.
Yeah.
If he wants to work hard.
And that's the question that we don't know. I mean, we can hear these reports. Stephen A. Said this, as BT mentioned. But, I mean, I'm not in the Philly locker room. I have no idea.
I do know that he hasn't gotten better at anything.
That's right.
So, which kind of supports certainly what Stephen said. Every weakness that he's had since he entered the NBA remains a big-time weakness.
Yeah.
If you think about it in that term.
That's right.
Like, imagine if you didn't work on your fumbling.
Oh, dude, I would have been out of the league.
Well, for sure, yes. But that would have been directly attributable to a lack of effort, recognition, and work.
Yes.
You recognized it. You put the effort in. You were maniacal about it. You went from that to basically an all-time great.
Yeah.
Really is what happened.
Yeah. No,
so
you're right.
If anybody knows about a radical overhaul, you completely changed your running style.
That's right.
You forget about me with my crooked-ass golf swing. You should really be the one saying, if I can go from how I used to run, little loose, to now high and tight and totally fundamentally not change my gait, but wasn't your spine more erect? I mean, things changed for you.
Yeah, and I got more powerful and faster, interestingly. It was like the unintended consequences of just trying to figure out how to hold on to the damn ball. I became a better running back. Like, physically became a better running back. But so, yeah, I know it can happen. And I'm not the only example. We've seen this over the years, from either baseball players to hockey players, etc. You change little subtleties and you hone in, and you can actually make yourself significantly better than you ever thought you could. But Ben Simmons, I mean, as much as I do think it's mechanical, BT, right? The spin, as you were talking about, like, he's got that crooked spin, so it comes outside.
Comes
it's
off
like weird.
Like
I know what you're talking about. It comes off weird. You can see it as soon as he lets it go. It's why it always hits the side of the rim and bounces. Like, it very rarely bounces back this way. They always hit and go sideways.
True.
Right? And so the mechanical side is one thing. But I also think the mental side is there. Like, the fact that he wouldn't even attempt a shot at the rim in the fourth period, it just screams, I'm scared of the moment.
Yep.
Right? And in the three last games, he didn't take a shot in the fourth period. I was talking to Berkowitz, as you guys.
No, five of the seven games.
Well, five of the seven games.
Didn't take a fourth quarter
shot. But three
in
a row, certainly.
Five.
And you know, Ron Berkowitz, our friend, who's a huge Philadelphia 76ers fan. I'm picking up our kids from school the other day. I'm like, this dude took four shots in a game seven. Are you kidding me?
It's repulsive.
Four shots in a game seven, right? It just doesn't make any sense for a guy that we want to call a superstar. And so I just sit there and say, he's not a superstar,
nope.
Right? He might be a great defender. Fantastic defender, maybe one of the best, backcourt defenders that we've seen in a really long time. Definitely one of the great young backcourt defenders that we've seen in a long time. But you can't call a guy who's a scared of the moment, right? Because that's how I see it, scared of the moment, mm-hmm. a superstar. And you know, the 76ers have a big decision here, right? They really do. I know you called for them. They got to move them. And if they can't do that, then I don't know how they change him, because it's been 4 years already. You know, it's not like he just came into the league last year. At some point, you figure it out and you understand the game. Like, he walks around like he's confident. If you go to a Philadelphia 76ers game, you see he's got swagger, right? Mm-hmm. He's winking at the crowd, like he's interacting. He's got that, like, I'm the man. But at the end of the day, you're not the man unless you do it. And do it consistently. You can score 40 one night, but don't give me 3 the following night, especially in the postseason. So there's something not clicking fully with him, yep. despite his prodigious skill set on so many different levels.
Which is why I don't position this as a slump. This, to me, is a complete athletic malfunction at the deepest level that has to be really jarring to a pro athlete.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's one thing to be a hack golfer or a guy who's picking up, playing pickup on Sundays at the gym, and it doesn't, you know, whatever your deficiency is, you work around. That's one thing. When you are 24 and he just signed a 5-year, $177 million contract and generally positioned as one of the great young ascending players in the game, and now you have complete reluctance to do something that you should do without thinking, and that is take the damn ball, cock it back, rip down the rim once you spun by Gallinari. By the way, it wasn't even Clint Capella who was lurking. It was Trae Young, which is even more alarming. Let me give you a number. This, to me, is interesting, though, about the whole psychology, the whole route, if he remains with Philly. I didn't know this until I saw this last night. I read it. Doc Rivers, all right, in year 3 as a pro, coming out of Marquette, first couple, you know, in Atlanta, shoots 60.8% in year 3. In year 4, he jumped up to 82.8%. That's basically rounded up 23% percentage jump, which is the highest in the history of the NBA with at least, I want to say, 250 attempts. The difference here, though, is that in year 1 and year 2, he was 78%. He just had this precipitous, inexplainable, odd drop in year 3, but he'd already put up the evidence that in year 1 and year 2, he was highly competent, well above the league average. And he was able to go from 60.8 to 82.8. So if you want to lean on that, I mean, maybe now, again, he was just about 80% for his career. Again, that was an outlier, that 1 year four. You know, the results lie in the work, man. I mean, there's been plenty of golfers. Watch, Phil Mickelson has toyed around with 3 or 4, the claw grip, the split grip, the cross-handed grip. I mean, all these wacky grips. Now, to me, if you could do that and somehow maintain, not Phil, but in general in golf, like a world-class standing, you're not going to be, you know, one of the great putters of all time, but can you just get functional? I don't think this is as hard as people are making it out to be, provided he's willing to roll up his sleeves and get to work.
Yeah.
And again, contrary to what Stephen A. said, that doesn't seem to be his mindset. But and this is not about getting in the gym and shooting the basketball 5. It's not so much about repetition. It's about the proper repetition. That's where people miss it. Think about how many times you've done something, but if you're doing it wrong, you're just further ingraining the wrong habits into your muscle memory. You got to do it right.
Yeah, so it's almost like he's got to go hire someone who's going to stay by his side and make him do every single rep correctly.
Everyone.
And if he doesn't, they got to tell him about it, right? Mm-hmm. He can't be afraid just because he's a star. You got to tell him about it. And honestly, BT, that's one of the hardest things to do when you're a superstar.
Oh, I can imagine.
Minds, right? Accepting criticism from someone who's not.
Yeah. You know what?
So,
yeah. I don't know if this is a great comparison, but there's been many a pitchers who come up with a pitch, whether it's a splitter, you know, whether it's a circle change, pitches they never had in their repertoire before. Now, you can tell me, well, at least they knew how to properly throw a baseball, unlike Ben Simmons, who doesn't properly know how to shoot a free throw. That's why it's not the perfect comparison, but there's still a lack of familiarity, and then eventually crossing the bridge of trust where you feel emboldened to take it from the bullpen to the slab in front of 30,000 people. Like, that's a big leap. So I don't want to hear it can't be done, but Doc can't do it for him. Scott O'Neill can't do it. Embiid can't do it for him. He's got to do it for himself. And we'll see if Ben Simmons is truly in the business of being great or in the business of being good, getting paid, and being a social media star and having fun. We'll see. We'll see.
We will.
You know? Well, T, yesterday was interesting. NFL, a player that, you know, we all know, we saw him on Hard Knocks a couple of years ago. Carl Nassib comes out openly gay, all right? Took a while. The reception's been great. A lot of support on social media. What's it mean for the NFL moving forward? We'll have that discussion coming up next. Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
All right, Tiki and Tierney here, CBS Sports Radio. It's the Tiki and Tierney Show. Just a heads up, coming up on Saturday, a full day and night of sports. 1 Eastern, it starts 10 Pacific on CBS with action of the WNBA's Washington and Dallas hookup. At 3 Eastern, noon Pacific, big names like Brooks Koepka, Bryson DeChambeau, and Dustin Johnson compete at the Travelers Championship. Then in primetime, 8 Eastern, 5 Pacific, it's another Superstar Saturday night with racing under the lights at the Camping World SRX Series, and that is all on Saturday on CBS. All right, Tiki and Tierney here, CBS Sports Radio, CBS Sports Network, Twitter, at Tiki and Tierney, YouTube.com/Tiki and Tierney, Instagram, same deal. Teek, before we get to Carl Nassib, I want to at least give you the exact words. I paraphrased what Stephen said this morning. Stephen A., it's actually worse. Santa found it. I'm happy he found this. I didn't see this during the last segment. Otherwise, I would have read it then. Then we'll get to Carl Nassib. Big story in the NFL. Big story in pro sports. He wrote, or he read from the text he received, quote, "He doesn't work. He doesn't listen. And everybody around him is family, and he's constantly babied." So that seems like there's a few impediments that the Sixers will have to plow through to connect to young Mr. Ben Simmons.
Wow. Okay. I mean, I thought you had to earn that kind of treatment, right?
We can sound very old and say the modern athlete has to earn it less than he did.
Yep.
But that's an accurate statement.
That's right.
And I know that because I was keeping tabs on the show when I was out a few days last week. I know that you had some issues, and I would have been there right there with you if I was on the air with Zion Williamson and Luka Doncic, apparently not happy with the direction of the franchise. Yeah. How about you do something?
That's right.
Before you start complaining.
Yeah, you're 22 years old, 24 years old. I mean, I know you're projected to be fantastic and great, but, I mean, you got to earn it no matter what you do, no matter how good you are, no matter how good you're going to be in 15 or 10 years. You got to earn it still. It's not just going to happen.
I'm with you. All right. So yesterday, if you were perusing Instagram or not on any of the apps, just maybe hopped on CBSSports.com or flipped on SportsCenter, whatever, you heard something pretty interesting from a pro athlete. This from Carl Nassib's Instagram account. Go ahead, guys.
What's up, people? I'm Carl Nassib. I'm at my house here in Westchester, Pennsylvania. Just want to take a quick moment to say that I'm gay. I've been meaning to do this for a while now, but I finally feel comfortable enough to get it off my chest. I really have the best life. I got the best family, friends, and job a guy could ask for. I'm a pretty private person, so I hope you guys know that I'm really not doing this for attention. I just think that representation and visibility are so important. I actually hope that like one day videos like this and the whole coming out process are just not necessary. But until then, you know, I'm going to do my best and do my part to cultivate a culture that's accepting, that's compassionate. And I'm going to start by donating $100,000 to the Trevor Project. They're an incredible organization. They're the number one suicide prevention service for LGBTQ youth in America. And they're truly doing incredible things. And I'm very excited to be a part of it, to help in any way that I can. And I'm really pumped to see what the future holds.
Okay. Now, let me connect the dots here. First of all, when I first heard this, my reaction was almost nothing.
Agreed.
Isn't that what you want?
That's exactly what you want, BT. Nothing I 100% agree with you. It was like,
good for Carl Nassib. Good.
It was like, that's cool.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, it
keeps scrolling.
It's almost felt like when someone announces, yeah, I'm having a baby.
Yeah.
At this point, I'm not talking about in the NFL because obviously it's rare in the NFL, but just in general, when you've heard that a celebrity or someone that you may be familiar with has come out, it's almost like, oh, yeah, congrats, man. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Good. You know, you need anything? Let me know.
As you should.
Type of thing. And the
NFL,
I'm so glad the NFL is at this point where that is the reaction. Mm-hmm. Where all of his friends, Saquon Barkley that played with him at Penn State and a bunch of other.
J.J. Watt,
a bunch of other NFL luminaries. The NFL itself, obviously the Las Vegas Raiders also showed him support.
So did the Chargers. Chargers said this is bigger than a rivalry. They tweeted that out.
Yeah, that's great. And I love that because let's be real, BT. There have been a gay players for years, decades, maybe forever, maybe since the inception of the league. It's just they never had the courage to come out.
Uh-huh.
Or it's never the right time for them to come out. It wouldn't have been accepted. And I don't know when in particular it changed. I'm trying to think, like, if in 1997, when I first came in the league, what would the reaction have been? It probably still would have been harsh. But by the time I finished in 2006, 2007 was my last game, but you know what I mean, the 2006 season, I'm pretty sure it was getting close to being acceptable.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't a couple of years later that we had Michael Sam get drafted by out of Missouri. And you know, look, Michael wasn't as good of a player as Carl Nassib is, but he gets drafted, and it was kind of well-received. It was oddly received, but also well-received.
Yep.
Because who feels threatened by this? No one anymore. And so I think over the last decade and a half since Michael Sam, it's only gotten, you know, so much more commonplace. We're more aware of it. I think more of us now have friends who were LBG, T, and Q. Hell, I did Kinky Boots. You came and saw it, BT.
Yeah,
I was on
stage
with a bunch of drag queens, and some of them became really close friends, including, you know, the lead of the show, Callum Francis, who was amazing.
Who we met after the show.
Yeah, he's a gorgeous man. You never would have thought that a former football player would be saying, Callum, you're a gorgeous man.
He looked like a pretty hot girl. I don't know how else to say it.
That's
I mean,
exactly
I'm watching
right.
from the stands with my wife. I'm like, Are we sure that's not a girl?
I hear you, right. But the point is, like, most people have become completely comfortable with it.
Absolutely.
And especially if you've been exposed to the culture and not just hear it from, I don't know, cliches that may have existed in media or television or whatnot.
Yeah. And by the way, even if you haven't been exposed to it, I guarantee that there are, you know, take whether you grew up in the 70s, the 80s, the 90s, or the early 2000s, you had posters on your wall of athletes who have not yet come out that are gay.
That's right.
That, you know, I wish the superstar would feel empowered and comfortable. And you've got to do it on your own timeline. You can't, nope, society can't speed it up for you. They can't tell you when to do it. Carl Nassib. Yesterday, for whatever reason, the timing was right, and he sounded so at ease. Great for him. The reception was awesome, and everybody moves on, and we wish him well, and we hope he has a great life because he's a human being. I think that the next frontier, though, is the true, undeniable, grade-A superstar.
I hear
you. Not that the reaction will be different. I'm not implying that at all. But I do think, you know, that's going to be really important, and that's going to take a broader set of shoulders than I don't want to say broader than Carl, but let's face it. You know, if one of the superstar quarterbacks comes out tomorrow that he's gay, there's going to be more expected of that, rightly or wrongly, of that person to be a champion, to carry the, not the cross, but to really be, not that Nassib won't be a pioneer, he will be, but with that level of stardom comes different juice. You know what I'm saying?
You mean in the LGBTQ community? You mean
yes, 100%.
Yeah, exactly. I think you're exactly right. So all of a sudden, you become not the head of it, but you become the face of it in a way.
And you might not want to be the face of it.
That's right. And so,
to be fair,
while we position some of these still closeted superstar athletes as afraid to come out because of the reaction in their locker rooms or around their league, which now I think we've proven and we've said it's been this way for individual sports for decades, right? In team sports, it's even started to become commonplace. At least the response has become, you know, we're conditioned to say congrats and good job.
Yep.
Whereas it's less about that and it's more about, okay, now the community expects you to be the face of them. And
yeah.
Some people might not be ready for that.
No, that could be daunting. You know, some people just want to live their lives without necessarily being the focal point of not a movement necessarily, because, you know, being gay is not a movement, but being front and center and, you know, being readily accepted by all, that's been slow to come, unfortunately. And I started to say it before, and I know we get a break here, but there was, I forget the exact year, but it was in the 2000s for sure. You were playing. You probably remember this. Because there was a lot of stories. There was, I don't know the name of the website, but it was, I'm pretty sure it was a gay website.
Yeah.
Like a gay lifestyle website that was about to out a New York baseball superstar, okay, as being gay. And there were a lot of rumblings about, you know, this player having liaisons with somebody who was in the news at one point and that they had a place in the Hamptons together. All this crazy. I don't know if it's true.
Mm-hmm.
But to the point, and a lot of people, the inference was, wow, it sounds like Mike Piazza. And I only say that. I would never be reckless and just throw Mike's name out there. The only reason I say that is because Mike Piazza himself felt compelled to hold a press conference and tell everybody that he was not gay.
Yeah.
And right at Old Chase Stadium in front of the dugout, I could still see it. And I remember I was on the radio at that point, but the way that conversation was crafted.
That's right.
Was very different than we are talking about Carl Nassib.
That's right.
And that's a great thing.
Yeah.
It's a great thing.
Yeah, at that time, I remember that, BT, because it was almost like, this is your private life. If you're gay or not, who cares?
Yeah.
You don't have to tell us.
No.
Right? And if you want to, great. If not, don't. I remember that very vividly,
I'm sure
BT.
You do. You were playing.
Yep.
I wasn't sure if it was you. I'm like, I don't know. Maybe Tiki's gay. I don't know. I don't know. I don't listen.
Oh, you mean at the time?
I'm teasing. The bottom line is, and this is all that matters in all this stuff, the more we become, the less we react to this, and this is just common sense taking over.
Yep.
The less we react to this, like stunned or surprised or, God forbid, like aghast, like, which is ridiculous, then the more centered we're becoming. It's the bottom line.
That's exactly right.
Good for Carl Nassib. Good for him, man.
Agreed.
Live a good life, man. Go get it. All right, let's get the update from Ack. We'll come back with the Inbounds Out of Bounds. Here's Ack right now.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medella, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medella is your reward. Medella, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Oh, yeah. Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio. What's up? Hopefully everybody's having a good Tuesday. Inbounds, Out of Bounds in a moment. First, though, time for the Player of the Week, brought to you by Grainger. Taking a look at the one who got it done. It is Giannis Antetokounmpo. 4 games against the Nets last week. The Greek freak pumped in 35 and snared 14 rebounds on the average, all while shooting an average of 60% from the floor. Finally discovered what was a good shot and what was not. and played to his strengths. Even though he missed some free throws, unlike Simmons, he wasn't reluctant to take it to the rack. Didn't impact the rest of his game as the Bucks beat the Nets in seven, advanced to the Eastern Conference Finals. Player of the Week brought to you by Grainger. For all the ones who get it done, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry backed by 24/7 support and access to product experts. Call clickgrainger.com/safety or just stop on by. So next hour, I mean, gangsta Brady. Tom Brady is ruthless once he escaped that the tight grip of the New England way. He is just... His personality is awesome.
Yeah, I love
and
that.
And he buried, right, he buried a quarterback, not by name. He buried a quarterback, but we will try to deduce, based on circumstance and inference, who exactly he was referring to. We'll also chat with Paul Casey, PGA Tour golfer, talk about the U.S. Open, and we'll get to, right around 4:40 Eastern, the Supreme Court ruling against the NCAA, 9-0, so complete uniformity, which never happens. You know it was time to really change things up. And Teak didn't get a chance to weigh in on that. I did yesterday, but we'll get Teak involved in that a little later in the show. But right now, it is Inbounds, Out of Bounds. Teak, you ready to roll?
I am.
Let's go, brother.
Anything can happen in sports and often does. What's right? What's wrong? And who's just crazy? We decide. Inbounds and Out of Bounds now.
All right, as we know, during the offseason, this really got things jumping to a wild offseason. The Rams traded quarterback Jared Goff for Matthew Stafford, the former Lion getting pretty solid reviews already. First new wideout, DeSean Jackson, said Stafford's arm is out of this world. That's a quote. And now coach Sean McVay told SI, quote, bro, this dude's a bad MF-er. He's even better than advertised, end quote. So we do believe Matthew Stafford will be a top name in the MVP conversation in 2021.
Wow.
And by top name, let's narrow it down to top three.
I know. I was trying to think of the number. Like if you're
let's
gonna
go
say,
with three.
If you're going to say, hey, you could get like 10 of them at the beginning of the season, maybe.
Top three.
I'm going to say out of bounds of that. I think there are some other very elite players, including Derrick Henry, who rushed for 2,000 yards, who's going to keep getting fed. There's obviously Pat Mahomes, who's going to be the man. We talked about Kyler Murray. It's, you know, ascending. If he's healthy, we know how dynamic of a player he is. Aaron Donald, his teammate, will probably be there as well. So I'm going to say out of bounds. I think Matthew Stafford is going to thrive in Sean McVay's system. He's a smart player. He does all those, you know, wonky things that we see with success from let's say, Aaron Rodgers or something. He just doesn't get the recognition because the team isn't good. So I'm going to say out of bounds, but I can't wait to see him in this offense.
I am really looking forward to this, although I agree out of bounds as well. Not by much. He'll be, you know, on the outer periphery. Maybe within the first month we'll throw him a little bone here and there. You hear, you know, reference maybe six or seven names into the list. But if you're six or seven, you're not really in the MVP conversation, to your point, which is why I wanted to make sure we modified it down to three. Listen, you got into this for greatness. I got into this for answers. And this is something I want an answer to. Is Matthew Stafford just not wired in a way that is necessary to win big? I don't know the answer to that. I'm assuming no, by the way, but I want that answer. Or, you know, was he just swallowed up by a completely inept franchise since the day he was drafted first overall out of Georgia, which is pretty much what I latch onto. It's what I surmise. Listen, you didn't mention Tom Brady. Mm-hmm. You didn't mention Aaron Rodgers. You didn't mention Josh Allen. You did mention Henry. You mentioned Mahomes or no?
I did mention Mahomes and Aaron Donald.
And Donald. So, I mean, those are six names right there. No disrespect to Stafford, but, you know, to go from, you know, where he was, which was a guy with a good arm and some good stats and no winning, to thrust right into the middle of the MVP conversation, I need a little more substance before I put you there.
Agreed.
It wouldn't stun me, but out of bounds, barely.
Are you in or are you out?
All right, we saw the viral video showed Nick McKellar, known as Suns and Four fan, who beat up a Nuggets fan. The Suns gave him tickets to game one. Fans even gave McKellar a standing ovation and lined up to take selfies during the game. Now, of course, after the game, Suns and Clippers fans predictably got into a huge fight inside the arena, and the team issued a statement saying, quote, "We expect Suns fans to keep their cool off the court. We will not tolerate the violence that erupted following Sunday's game," end quote. In or out, we do believe the Suns glorify McKellar embolden fans to fight after game one?
I'm going
to
say out of bounds. I don't think that it emboldened fans, but when you were out, BT, we hit this a couple of times in inbounds and out of bounds and also blast in the blast. And I just think it's a bad look. I know what they're trying to do. It's just supporting the fans or the Suns fandom by retaliating to violence. But I think matching violence with violence is not a recipe for a peaceful society. Right? Yeah. There are many other ways to handle a heckler, an idiot, a dumb you-know-what who's being... you know, pain in the butt in the stands instead of getting into a fight with them and then being championed because you did that. I mean, what kind of example are you setting? Maybe he doesn't have kids, but I got to tell you what, if my kids are in an altercation and they're just talking back and forth, yibbering back and forth, and I don't want them to just all of a sudden go to fighting. Now, if it gets to the point where you have to, that's one thing.
Yep.
This was not the case.
Yep.
So the champion of this, I don't like.
I don't.
But
like
I'm going to say out of bounds. I don't think that precipitated the fighting after game one.
Yeah, it's kind of semantics here because it's all kind of the same thing.
Yeah,
I'm going to say in bounds. I'm going to agree entirely with your premise. Everything you said, I completely co-sign. But I'm going to go in the inbounds direction. Although I would add, you know, what really emboldens fans to fight? I would say two things. Number one, inherent malice toward whatever and alcohol.
That's the two.
Like you're predisposed to think a certain way. And or you just consume too much alcohol and inhibitions are lost and you just start saying dumb things and then hands start flying and that doesn't benefit anybody. I do believe that the glorification by the Suns kind of made him a bit of a cult hero for sure, not kind of. And it certainly increased the awareness. And in today's social media world, sometimes all you need for somebody to say, well, man, if this guy got that, well, me, I just... There was a bad look all around. I can't make them as culpable as he is and was, but not that far behind for a pro outlet. That's a very irresponsible course of actions to take. I don't like what the Suns did.
Are you in or are you out?
All right. So yesterday, Mets ace Jacob DeGrom. Let's see how many lines this is. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Only 8 lines, Santa. There you go. Not too bad. Jacob became the first pitcher to be checked for a foreign substance. Important story, though. By the umps and MLB's new crackdown on the sticky stuff. Now, he came out clean. He was kind of laughing a little bit, smiling, a wry smile. The 2-time Cy Young winner put up 5 scoreless frames in the Mets 4-2 win over the Braves. Lowered his ERA to 0.5, 0.50,
and extended. Insane.
That's insane. And extended a scoreless streak to now. I actually think it's 30. It says 27. I believe it's actually 30. I think 27 is wrong. Mike, double check that if you can. I think it's 30. Now, while DeGrom's been dominant this year, he's only pitched out of the sixth inning once in his last 8 starts. All right, averaging just 5 1/3 per start in that span. So we do view DeGrom's dominance a little differently, knowing he's only pitching 5 innings per start, in or out.
Yeah, this is out of bounds for me, BT. This is the norm in baseball these days, and we see this every night, really. Managers are sabermetricking their decisions on whether or not to keep their starting pitchers in games. And so just because of the fact that it is the new norm, I can't hold that against Jacob DeGrom, because I honestly believe if you said, all right, Jacob, go 7 or 8 and you're going to get that pitch count up to 120 or whatever it may be, he'd still do it and he'd
Absolutely.
Still be dominant. So
yeah.
Out of bounds.
Totally out of bounds. Not even close. First of all, you've got to incorporate the context of his season so far. He's had 3 different medical issues pop up. So a lot of this is trying to preemptively avoid things and circumvent potholes based on, you know, his injury history this year, plus his injury history back in the day had Tommy John. So, no. If this was like the first year and DeGrom popped out of nowhere and it was, all right, you're averaging 5 1/3, and, I mean, even at that point, if your ERA was less than 0.5, I'd still be incredibly impressed, but... We've seen Jacob DeGrom be the best pitcher in baseball for years now. I've said a few times on the show, he's the best pitcher I've ever seen with my own eyes. I mean, I've never seen anybody better. So, no, I do not view this differently. Jacob DeGrom is an unstoppable force, and he's must-watch every time he's on the hill.
Tune in next time for another edition of Inbounds or Out of Bounds with Tiki and Tierney.
You know, he's got this. He's a long, lanky body with this very repeatable delivery. Mm. You know, he was a position player, as you know, for a long time. Even though he's had a little surgery, he doesn't have a ton of bullets compared to some of the other pitchers who grew up pitching. He could do this for a while, we hope. Tom Brady throwing shade, but at home next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.